This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. In the past year, the pandemic has created chaos in families and communities. Many people lost loved ones, jobs, or access to essential goods. And amid a summer filled with rising cases of COVID-19 and political unrest last year, networks across Illinois sprung up to provide resources and services for those who were in need. People came together making lunches for kids, delivering groceries to the elderly, making masks for healthcare workers. These voluntary acts of solidarity within communities have been called mutual aid, and the concept has long existed in the U.S. before the pandemic. In the late 1960s, for example, the Black Panther Party paved the way for future mutual aid efforts through their Free Breakfast for School Children program, which fed tens of thousands of kids. Joining us today to talk about mutual aid networks in Illinois and how to get started in your own communities are Catherine Eastfold. She's a volunteer administrator for the Springfield Families Helping Families Facebook group. Catherine, thanks for being here. Good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Martha Mills, a volunteer administrator for the Champaign-Urbana COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group. Martha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we are also joined in this conversation by Mary Zirkel. She's an organizer with the American Friends Service Committee and a member of the P.O. Box Collective, a cultural and mutual aid hub in Chicago. Mary, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation as well. 800-222-9455 is the number. Have you helped or maybe benefited from the kindness of strangers this past year? Is this kind of generosity still necessary as the pandemic continues to recede? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Mary, I'm going to begin with you. Last year, around this time, we were a few months into the pandemic, and the phrase mutual aid kept surfacing around the U.S. Maybe you can just sort of give us a basic idea. What does mutual aid mean? Where does this idea come from?
Yeah, well, I think it's an old idea. See many immigrant groups in the U.S. forming mutual aid societies. But I think the other way to look at it is that these are projects that are really developed to meet survival needs and other support that communities need when particularly the government or the communities around them can't provide those things. But it's really the important part about mutual aid is that it's really a solidarity building and movement building mechanism as well. And I think, you know, this period of the last year has given us so many different opportunities to really understand how our shared well-being is tied together. And I think that's why you saw such an explosion of mutual aid projects in this last period of time, is that people really realized that their community members were in need of various things and wanted to step up and support.
You mentioned solidarity, and that phrase comes up a lot, solidarity, not charity. Can you talk about how mutual aid is different from charity?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, for one thing, people in mutual aid projects tend to be part of the community that the mutual aid project serves. So it's really community members helping community members. And I think for many of us, and I can speak for myself, the mutual aid projects that I'm involved in also, help people to understand why their needs aren't being met. You know, that's sort of like building the understanding, a shared understanding of what are wrong with the systems. In our community or in our world that, for instance, in Chicago, the mutual aid projects I'm involved in are part of the effort to move funding from policing into the community needs that go unfunded. So in Chicago, we have a situation where $4 million a day is spent on policing, while 54 public schools and 6 mental health clinics have been closed. And so that is very stark for us. And so our mutual aid projects are also part of that project of abolition. So you're building solidarity, building knowledge, and really working together to help build alternatives, which are really important as you look at changing systems.
Martha, the Champaign-Urbana COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group, it describes mutual aid projects as a form of political participation in which people take responsibility for caring for one another. We heard Mary mention a moment ago about, you know, a form of organizing. Can you talk about how participating in mutual aid is a form of political action from your perspective?
Absolutely. You know, I think just like Mary, you know, touched on, our governing parties are not taking care of our citizens at this point, especially the ones who are most in need. And so to take this action and to take that responsibility out of their hands and put it into the hands of private citizens who are, you know, going to take care of our own, you know, feeding our own people and getting information that is necessary to people about housing and different food banks and different ways of even self-policing in our communities is, I think, a very political statement saying, you know, we don't need you know, these bigger organizations who really don't have often our best interests at heart.
All right, listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about mutual aid, the rise of mutual aid during the pandemic, although as we've been hearing, the concept long predates that. We're speaking with Mary Zirkel, Catherine Eastfold, and Martha Mills from different parts of Illinois about this. We need to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation after the break. We do want to take your calls. We already have a caller on the line. I'm asking, please hold on for us. If you want to also join the conversation, 800-222-9455. We'd love to hear your story about mutual aid. And we're going to ask whether our guests and whether you think this will continue after the pandemic as it continues to recede, hopefully, knock on wood. If you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about mutual aid in this conversation. We're speaking with Mary Zirkel, who's an organizer with the American Friends Service Committee and a member of the P.O. Box Collective, a cultural and mutual aid hub in Chicago. Martha Mills, volunteer administrator for CU COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group. And Catherine Eastfold, who's a volunteer administrator for the Springfield Families Helping Families Facebook group. We want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Before the break, we were talking about what mutual aid is, what it isn't. Solidarity, not charity, is one of the key phrases that comes up a lot when people are talking about this. But let's get a little more into the nuts and bolts. So, Catherine, mutual aid, I mean, it could be providing food and face masks, as I mentioned, but also childcare and transportation. Can you talk about what kind of resources and services people were looking for on the Springfield Families Helping Families Facebook group? And has that changed over the course of the pandemic?
Sure, it definitely has. That's been one of the most interesting things about this journey with this group is how the needs have evolved. And when it started, it was founded by Scott McFarland, who used to be the president of the Springfield District 186 School Board. And so he had a front row seat to the needs of the community on March 13th, 2020, which was our founding date. And that was the date that the school shut down due to COVID. And he was hearing from families who were worried about childcare and they were worried about being able to feed their children without the benefit of school breakfasts and lunches. that they were getting every day. And so that was really how we started, was with those needs that parents and grandparents and guardians would have when they could no longer send their children to school. And that's why we were originally Families Helping Families. But of course, even though we've kept the same name, we've really become People Helping People, because a week later, restaurants, bars, other businesses that were deemed non-essential were shut down, and people were in a world of hurt, and they were needing a lot of other things besides just those two things. And so it became everything from diapers, pet food, clothes, furniture, in requests for information about food pantries, unemployment benefits was a big one. And yes, things like transportation eventually. It's kind of become just about everything. And it really has evolved as we've gone from things that are very pandemic related, such as I can't find Lysol and hand sanitizer at the grocery store, or I need to know where I can get a COVID test and get the results back today, to a lot of issues that were in our community long before COVID and unfortunately continue to cause challenges in our community long past this pandemic if we don't address them. And so we decided pretty early on, although we were in crisis mode of dealing with this pandemic, we decided early on that this group would be a part of the community for as long as there was a demand for it. And so it's been interesting to see that demand and those needs evolve.
Let's go now to the phones. 800-222-9455 is the number. Tana is on the line from Menard County. Hello, Tana.
Hi. I am so glad you're giving us this chance to thank people like this and to respond about what's going on. My husband has been bedbound with a stroke for 3.5 years. He's a veteran of World War II, the occupation of Japan, and I've been caring for him at home all this time, and I had help 2 to 3 days a week before so that I could run a few errands. So during the pandemic since March 17th last year, I've had to totally rely on others most of the time. We do have good service from Menard County Community Services to get to doctor's appointments with their big wheelchair van. But the neighbors out here have really stepped up, and I've got one couple in particular, Alicia and Kevin. And Kevin is a paramedic, and he is responds to calls out here in the middle of the night. He and another fellow who's now moved away, they both. So, you know, I think you were talking about first responders. I wasn't able to follow along. But anyway, and then his wife, Alicia, works in town at an office, and I'm able to ask people that I know, friends in town and from church, to go get things and take to her office, and she brings them home, and she's just, they've been wonderful.
Sure.
Then Margie and Bill out here in our neighborhood, Pam and her son John, and Susan and Teresa stays with my husband. She's a retired nurse.
It sounds like you're getting a lot of help from your neighbors, yeah. and definitely appreciating that. Thank you, Tana. We're gonna move on. We really appreciate you taking the time to call in and thank everyone who has been helping you. Martha, let me ask you: mutual aid is rooted in being hyper local, as we just heard from our caller there, right? And the idea is, I think instead of giving money or resources, you know, text X number to send $10 to the Red Cross or something, you know, can do things for people who are near you, whether it's transportation or providing diapers, or maybe just donating money through Venmo or Cash App or other apps that can receive money. Can you talk about, Martha, how being hyper local makes mutual aid more effective at directly helping people?
Oh, absolutely. I think about different groups on, you know, that pop up on social media and stuff too, that maybe aren't even considered, you know, they don't have the title mutual aid, but, you know, you'll see like swap groups or spend nothing groups. And those are all also forms of mutual aid where, you know, people offer up things that they don't need anymore, or they post about things that they do need. And, you know, it's so much easier, I think, you know, to give directly to people, and then you can see the effect that it has, and it makes, you know, it makes that feeling of altruism I think, even stronger when you can see a direct effect. And I think it often, hopefully, leads people to want to give even more. You know, we've set up, there are three just very small, not even food pantries, but food closets in Champaign and Urbana, where people just buy extra groceries and put shelf stable things in these various locations around town for people who are either housing insecure or who are food insecure. And it's a way for people to just be able to go and pick something up that's very quick and maybe doesn't even need to be cooked. And these are, I feel like these are simpler things to do than, you know, just kind of the impersonal, like text a number for Red Cross, like you mentioned. And you really get to see the change in your own community. And I think it just really, I think it's more eye-opening and just more literally close to home.
Yeah, no, there is that satisfaction in anonymous giving to anonymous others, right? The highest form of giving, I've heard it said. Mary, I want to ask you, a lot of these groups that we're talking about have risen up, as we've heard, in response to the pandemic. But people who really are into the idea of mutual aid think it should exist outside of disasters or times of crisis. Do you expect to see the mutual aid networks that have come up in Illinois in the past year or so continue as the pandemic recedes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the most, that's kind of a silver lining of the trauma that we've all been through over the past year, I think, are these, you know, I look at it as new social relationships, because we're, these projects spring up. I know so many more of my neighbors. Part of the mutual aid work that I'm involved in is located in my neighborhood of Rogers Park in Chicago through Rogers Park Food and F-Bombs and P.O. Box Collective. And I've met so many more neighbors over the last year, even though I couldn't see them, you know, I met them over Zoom, but now I'm able to see them more in person. And, you know, the need is huge. So I know that, you know, post-pandemic, there's still going to be a huge need for, you know, baby formula, diapers, cleaning products. And part of what we do too is redistribute food from things like Whole Foods Market, who get rid of tons of healthy food and redistribute that within the thing. But the exciting part to me is that, you know, one of the long-term projects that we're all committed to is, you know, reducing the role of policing in our society. And so I'm the safety coordinator for our Rogers Park Free Store. And what we've been doing is training people. We've been developing safety protocols and developing alternatives for calling the police. So like building skills of neighbors in our community so that we can help each other out. And when there is a crisis that doesn't require an armed police person to be there, we've developed alternatives and we've got these social networks now. And we're gonna be getting more training in things like, de-escalation and, how to administer Narcan, things like that. So I think this is the exciting part. When we get to know our neighbors, when we work together, we can build these new social structures that are really important for us to all keep each other safe and, thrive. So I think it's a very exciting time to be involved in this work.
Catherine, I want to ask you about we were talking about the politics of this earlier. And I wonder if there's a reason, though, as people who are maybe, let's say, progressive, maybe they believe in a universal basic income or something, if there's room to be wary of mutual aid, right, to the extent maybe it undercuts pressure for the government to strengthen the social safety net. I wonder what you make of that critique, potentially.
So that's a really interesting question, because I personally have always thought of myself as more of a systems person and someone who looked at the broader systems and long term, how are we going to fix these problems? And so I don't know if this is the kind of project I would have chosen, except that my friend asked me to be an admin, and now I'm involved in things like delivering school meals and dropping off food boxes on people's porches and coordinating all of that. And it has been really eye-opening, because of course those short-term needs are absolutely necessary while we're fixing the systems and while we're questioning why all of these supports or some of these supports aren't necessarily available from the government or from other places. And people come at it from different directions. We absolutely have very active members on all parts of the political spectrum. And we don't really talk about it that much on the group. We try to kind of stay away from that and just stick to meeting those short-term needs. But I think what's important is that people do see the gaps that are there and they start talking about that in their own lives. And I also think what's important is that people know that they're not alone. And even if you are very focused on the politics of it and how do we fix healthcare and how do we fix food insecurity or the school to prison pipeline or whatever it might be, sometimes you can feel really alone in that. And it can feel sterile and we aren't necessarily meeting our neighbors or meeting the people whom we're helping. And what I've seen happen through this mutual aid group, through this Facebook group, is even during the worst times of the pandemic, when people were not meeting face to face, they were meeting each other online and encouraging each other and helping each other to feel like they weren't alone. And even though we're very careful to say, you know, we're not mental health care professionals, if you are in crisis, here's a hotline that you call, here's a walk-in behavioral health services place to go. But we can still, even though we're not professionals, just give each other that sense of, hey, I've been there too. Your neighbors are going through this too. We're all going through this together. And in a sense, I think that's in a way more effective than saying, I want you to sign a petition or we're going to start a political movement, because it's very grassroots. It's very organic. It's not pressuring anybody to do anything, but we're learning together what the needs are and how we can help each other, how we can share with each other.
Mary, just less than a minute left in our conversation, so maybe just in a few sentences, if people are interested in starting a mutual aid network in their town or their neighborhood, where do people begin?
Good question. I'd pick up this really great book by Dean Spade called Mutual Aid, Building Solidarity During This Crisis and the Next. It's a just short little book, but it's got a lot of great suggestions and kind of gives it a theoretical framework. But I think, you know, the other thing is, just listening to Martha and Catherine and the great work that they're doing, you know, go on Facebook and search your neighborhood or your immediate community. I bet you'll find some projects that exist already. Or the third thing is just create a pod with your friends. So making sure that you have a group of people that you can rely on for support, whatever it is.
Mary Zirkle is an organizer with the American Friends Service Committee, member of P.O. Box Collective, a mutual aid hub in Chicago. We've also been speaking with Catherine Eastfold, who's a volunteer administrator for the Springfield Families Helping Families Facebook group, and Martha Mills, administrator for the CU COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group. Mary, Catherine, Martha, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you
so much.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Brian Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer, and our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. If you have a moment, go to our website, 21stshow.org, where you can sign up for our podcast. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, NPR One, just about anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.